on the board for tonight is professional standards boards regulations. So we have two that are in front of us from PSB that are for action tonight. So if we could have Dr. Linnea Bradshaw, Executive Director, Professional Standards Boards to prevent information on the regulation, and then a public comment that was received.
Thank you for having me again tonight. It's wonderful to be with you. My name is Linnea Bradshaw. I am the executive director, and I have, I believe, two for action and three for information. First is, up is salary supplements for educators, and 1501, I presented this for information last month. The amendments presented this year are very minor and reflect revisions of 1503, which is the comprehensive induction program or educator mentoring, and that will come before you probably in May. But what they're doing with that is they're separating out administrator mentoring from teacher and specialist mentoring. And in 1501, there are new definitions for these terms, as well as some other changes in places where the mentoring program is mentioned. Currently, the only stipends or supplements that are available are National Board certification for educators, and then also for acting as a mentor. Are there any questions about this regulation?
There are no questions or comments. All right, Dr. Bradshaw, do you have anything else that you wanted to add on 1501?
Not on 1501, thank you.
Okay, all right then, is there a motion to approve as currently presented Regulation 1501, Salary Supplements for Educators?
Lo Fink, so moved.
Audrey Noble, second.
If you could call the roll.
Mr. Lo Fink.
Yes.
Dr. Noble.
Yes.
Reverend Powell.
Yes.
Mr. Rushdan.
Yes.
Ms. Sweeney.
Yes. The motion carries. The next on the agenda for tonight is Regulation 1584, School Social Worker.
Thank you. I also presented on this regulation for information last month. As you may recall, we eliminated the one-year school-based internship as it was replicated by the mentoring program. And this puts social workers who must hold a separate license from the Division of Professional Regulation in line with how we treat school nurses. Are there any questions or comments? I'm not sure how much I wanted to go into depth with this, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right, I know we talked about these previously, but any further questions or comments for Dr. Bradshaw? Okay, in the absence of any comments, is there a motion to approve as currently presented Regulation 1584?
I move, Reverend Powell, that we approve Regulation 1584.
Lo Fink, second.
Smith, if you could call the roll.
Mr. Lo Fink.
Yes.
Dr. Noble.
Yes.
Reverend Powell.
Yes.
Mr. Rushdan.
Yes.
Ms. Sweeney.
Yes, the motion carries. The next that we have three regulations that will come in front of us at a future time. So I'm going to pass Dr. Bradshaw there, 1510, issuance of initial license, 1582, school nurse, and 1581, school reading specialist. So Dr. Bradshaw, I will pass to you to discuss those.
So 1510, initial license, is the regulation that allows people to get their initial teaching license. As you recall, an initial license is generally valid for 4 years, and when and after the 4 years, someone moves on to a continuing license, which they need to renew every 5 years. And so this is for the initial license. This regulation is extremely long and somewhat difficult to understand. I believe the draft is probably 15 pages. In order to help my board understand it better, I created a graphic organizer to outline the structure of the regulation and to highlight changes. I believe that's attached in your e-board. It may be overwhelming tonight, but you may come with questions next time. I did want to highlight that there are two main changes in this contained in the amendments. First is to create flexibility in the length of the initial license. Currently, these licenses are issued for a period of 4 years, and that cannot be shortened, and it really cannot be lengthened. The new language allows the length of time for an initial license to be shortened for those who have prior years of experience, either in-state or out of state. And these would be people who have less than or 4 years or less of experience, but who at least have some. Currently, we have people coming into the state with maybe 1 or 2 years of experience out of state. And currently we give those people a 4-year initial. And so this just allows them to get credit for prior experience, so to speak, so they could move on to their continuing license faster. It also cuts the time that they are in the mentoring program down accordingly, because you are in the mentoring program when you are on an initial license. The other major amendment is to delineate the process for someone qualifying for their license under the 91 days in lieu of student teaching. And this is a complicated process, and we spent several meetings going through what the process actually is, as it was not laid out in the current regulation. It's not laid out at all. And it's not really a change, but it's just simply clearing up what is current practice so that everyone can be on the same page of what they need to do in order to get a license through this particular pathway. And are there any questions that you have off the top of your head? I know that this might be something you need to absorb for a while. It spent several months in committee and at the board level just so we could make sure to understand all the changes.
Yeah, Dr. Bradshaw, this is Audrey Noble. Here, I thought you did that graphic organizer for us, but thank you, because it did make it a lot easier to understand it. I do have a question about Section 4, where you were just alluding to about the long-term substitute teaching. Can you clarify for me the thinking behind why the long-term substitute teaching doesn't apply to all the certificates? In other words, it doesn't apply to the core areas, it applies to like everything else. What's the thinking behind that?
So I know that that is actually written in the Delaware State Code. I can't point to the section off the top of my head, but there is code that says that that student teaching, that this 91 days in lieu of student teaching cannot be done in any core area. And so we are simply matching code as to the reasons behind that. I'm not sure how long that has been in code. My guess is they just wanted to make sure that those who are in core areas are have more training before they go into the classroom. That's my speculation, but I really don't know.
I raise this question because we're dealing with teacher shortages all over the place and in many of these core areas. And I'm looking at, policies and regulations that could be creating barriers. And I recognize that it's in code, but I'm wondering if we need to have any discussion about that. I mean, would it make it easier? And, could a person be just as successful if they had, a long-term substitute teaching position, even though they were becoming a middle school math teacher?
I would have to say that while it might be possible, we have a fairly open ARTC process that can allow someone to begin working and begin in an ARTC program, because there are in addition to that 91 days for your license, you do need to take an extra 15 credits in the content area.
And
that process usually happens after the initial license is granted. Then you get an emergency certificate. And so while the ARTC process is pretty open, and mm-hmm. the difference between those two is that ARTC allows one to be hired at a full salary immediately, and this person has to spend 91 days, which is pretty much half of a school year, as a long-term substitute. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, quite a different type of thing. And so I'm not sure, I'm not entirely sure that we want to go that way.
So let me just ask this then, because we've been talking about, early literacy teachers and early childhood certification. Does ARTC, I'm familiar with the ARTC program, like at the middle and high school level. Does it actually apply? Are there opportunities for people to go through ARTC to become an early childhood teacher?
So I don't know the answer to that question, because I know the answer for elementary school, and the answer for elementary school is sort of yes and no, because for elementary, technically for elementary school, there is not one, but Relay Graduate School for Education has a graduate program that certifies one to become an elementary teacher. And if you are coming in as an elementary teacher, kind of in an alternative route, that's what you do, you do Relay Graduate School of Education to get that done. You're also mm-hmm. getting graduate credits beyond your bachelor's, which helps with the salary scale, et cetera. And so we don't have ARTC, and I actually don't know the answer to that question for early childhood. I don't believe at this point that we're looking at a shortage of early childhood teachers, but in listening to all of the conversation that went on, should universal pre-K come to fruition, that whole staffing challenge is going to be something. We do have, in looking at the certification data, and I don't have numbers off the top of my head, but we do have many people who are certified early childhood working in our elementary schools in K-2. We have a significant portion of those people who are working regular elementary.
But that is
a really good question. I mean, we may need to look at, beefing up our programs for that, but that piece of that's not my job.
I'm just trying to kind of think about this globally and recognize that mm-hmm. we have shortages in a lot of areas, and mm-hmm. but also this focus on, the movement that we're hoping to see and the improvement in early childhood. I'm just want to talk about, are there barriers in policies that were regulations that we're approving, or are there ways to get at things that would make things easier? So thanks. If you do get any further information about this ARTC related to early childhood, I'd appreciate hearing about that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions about initial license?
I'd say just go ahead then on to 1582, school nurse.
School nurse. And school nurse, it was in front of you, I believe, just last summer. But shortly after it went into effect, we became of two necessary changes. First is in the definition of clinical supervised nursing experience. There was just some confusion about what an advanced practice nurse was. And it turns out a nurse practitioner is an advanced practice nurse. And so we just reworded that a little bit. And then the second thing is that we became aware that Delaware is a part of the Enhanced Multi-State Nursing License Compact. And so we needed to add that language in there to ensure that school nurses, or someone who applied to be a school nurse, who is licensed under the compact and not necessarily in Delaware, can is qualified to be a school nurse because they're qualified to work as a nurse in the state.
I remember this actually. There were a lot of questions around this one, I think, over the summer. I can't actually remember when it was, but I do remember there was a lot of conversation. Did those just come up because they were flagged like as a problem, or was it just confusion? Just out of curiosity, those two definitional changes.
I don't remember exactly how it came up. It might have come up because of someone moving into the state and whether or not that was a valid license. And, you know, we all took a look at it and we're like, of course it's a valid license. And, oh, wait, you know, we just need to reflect that language in our reg.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, any other questions from the board?
Lene, I have a question about Section 10, about the Secretary of Ed review. I see that you've added the approved of the in the districts of the superintendent or the charter schools, the head of school. Are the approvals described in those two sections, 10.1.1 and 10.1.2, common to other certificates as well?
Yes. So actually that was language that we started adding to all the certificates after this one was published, I believe, in July, I think it was. And June or July. And so we started putting that 10.1.1, 10.1.2, just so we knew that, just to clarify who is allowed to request that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, and that's, that those are standard in all of the regs.
Okay, thanks.
As was, I believe we put in, There's the 3.2 language. Yes, that is also a change that we made since June. So we figured while we were at it, we would just put those new stuff in there.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I caught that. All right.
Any other further questions?
Yep. Yeah. Further questions with respect to school nurse. And again, these do come in front of us to the extent that you read something later, you can always bring it back. Okay, school reading specialist.
So as I stated last month, the PBS has decided to convene a public hearing in response to the comments about its proposed amendments to school reading specialist. We could not discuss the actual reg last month as it was not on the agenda, but in response to this reg being published in November, we received 6 comments. The proposed amendments included aligning the regulation to the reading literacy specialist standards of the International Literacy Association. 2 comments that we got supported the proposed amendments, and 4 comments stated that we should use the knowledge and practice standards for teachers of reading from the International Dyslexia Association. And the board decided that it did not have the expertise at that moment to make a decision regarding those comments. And so we are convening a public hearing, and the public hearing will be held at 5 p.m. on Thursday, February 4th, during the Professional Standards Board regular meeting. Are there any questions about the regulation of the public hearing?
No, I guess the only thing I would ask is that after you have the public hearing, potentially we're going to have something else come in front of us. Am I understanding that right? Like, if they're questioning it and you feel that you need to have more information, then we might see something different than what's directly in front of us?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and okay. I don't know exactly what the process will be. I do know that the public hearing will be held on the 4th, but the comment period lasts until March 1st. And so we will revisit this at our March meeting and may or may not take action. And, you know, in response to the comments, the board will make a decision of how it wants to amend. And I am unclear about the process, if that needs to be republished at that point or not, but whatever happens, it will come before you perhaps in a modified form, and I will just keep you updated. Okay.
No, I think that'd be valuable to hear what comes out of the public hearing as well. So, no, that's good. Thank you. Were there any other questions or comments with respect to the school reading specialist? Okay, I'm going to take that for a no, knowing that we're going to have a chance to talk about it again when we have a little bit more information that comes out of that hearing. Okay, so I think that means that we are finished with all of the regulations from PSB. Thank you very much, Dr. Bradshaw. We appreciate your time tonight.
Thank you. Good night.
Great, thanks. Thank you. Next on the agenda, update on upcoming regulations. Ms. Honor, if you wanted to give us a brief update, please.
Yes, you have the list of upcoming regulations available to you. You can see what is likely coming in front of you from the PSB as well as from the Department of Education. There's nothing specific that I'd like to highlight at this time, but I can open the floor if there are any questions.
Great. I think we'll go ahead. If there are any questions regarding any of the regulations, make sure that you reach out to Ms. Honor. And I know she always tries to make sure that we are well educated with what's coming in front of us. Next thing on the agenda is public comment on our regulations. So this is time that's been set aside to specifically at this point in the agenda for public comment on the regulations. Now, just to note that the board does not respond to questions or engage in any dialogue with those offering comments during the board meeting. So Ms. Honor, did we have anyone that signed up? And if so, could you read the list of individuals that have signed up via email or via the question box out loud?
We do not have anybody signed up for public comment.
Okay. All right, so we don't have to worry about opening up the phone line because they would have gone in via the chat. Okay, so we don't have anyone. Is anyone else wanting? They can't open up the phone line. Am I correct, Ms. Honor? Just to make sure, because I feel like sometimes.
Sure. What? We can't open up the phone line. You could chat in via the questions box or raise your hand in that feature. As of right now, okay. I don't see anybody.
All right. All right. I just wanted to clarify. Okay. So to the extent that no one has raised their hand or sent in via chat box, then we're going to go ahead and close that section and move on. Next on the agenda, charter schools. So we have a couple of things on the agenda with respect to charter schools. The first is just an update. This is information only. So Mr. Travers has provided information on work underway in the charter school office via his written report. So we have him on the line. Are there any questions? And then we'll move into the new charter school and all the modifications.
Hi, this is Leroy Travers from the charter school office. I'm open to any questions that you might have on the report.
Okay, I'm going to take the silence for that there aren't any questions. If I've spoken too fast, you know, feel free to add. We're going to have Mr. Travers for a few minutes here. So the next thing on the agenda is the new charter school and major modifications applications. So the charter school office has received 3 applications for major modifications and 1 application for a new charter school. The documentation has been posted for CSAC consideration. It's posted on our eBoard site. This information will be included as a part of the record that comes before the State Board action for State Board for action in December. The Charter School Accountability Committee is scheduled to meet in February and March to discuss the applications. Mr. Lofink and Mr. Rushdan will be participating on our behalf, so thank you both very much for that. And this is the opportunity for the board to raise any questions or issues that they want to make sure that are raised for consideration during the CSAC meeting. Now, I just want to make sure that everybody is a reminder for everyone that the board, we have to make our decision on the record that comes before us. So this is the best time that you can raise questions or concerns that you want our board representatives, Mr. Lofink and Mr. Rushdan, to address during the CSAC process, so then they become part of the record that comes in front of us. I'm going to open up the floor for conversation, but I'm also going to say that if there is something that as you go through all of the documentation that you want raised, you can also email Ms. Honor and make sure that Mr. Lofink or Mr. Rushdan have that information in front of them, because there was a lot of information out there, and I want to make sure this isn't the last chance, but this is a very good opportunity to get things out there. So with that, I'm going to open up the floor. Sorry, I muted myself when I open up the floor, but if it's quiet, I'm actually going to ask one question. The Dover Academy, some of the financial metrics that came out really red, and I have to say I have not dug into all of it, so I'm probably going to have to be one of the people that are emailing with additional questions. But Mr. Travers, could you give some color to that? I know the commentary under it said that they've taken actions, but you know, it was a pretty wonderful that they've taken actions, but it still was a little bit concerning. So I don't know if you could add some color to that. And I apologize that I haven't gotten enough into the weeds that I'm asking a more precise question, but there was just a lot of red in that, you know, it was a flag that they chose to address as well.
Yeah, so I'm not going to say much, because I really think that's probably something that should be asked at CSAC by Mr. Lofink or Mr. Rushdan to get clarification from the school. However, I will say that they're since their last financial framework was released, their enrollment has increased greatly to the point too that they have a waiting list and not a deficit. And I know that they've cut costs greatly. Their most recent financial framework, I'm hoping will be available and available to the CSAC committee before, and if it is, I'll send it to Jenna, who can send it out to you guys before the first meeting.
Okay, and, thank you. Well, go ahead.
Better. Yeah, it does look much better than what you've seen in the past.
Okay. Then I'm just going to note that, and you know, I guess I'll go through Jenna for this, but that's something that I would definitely want flagged and asked at CSAC. So if we get numbers before that, that's great, and maybe I won't have my questions, but as of now, I definitely would like a deeper dive into those financial numbers, and I'll come back with more specific questions to be asked.
Yeah, Mr. Travers, it's Lofink. I know I'm supposed to be, in essence, and I'm sure I will be getting some questions from our state board members. Just quickly, as we take a look at something like the proposed Stevenson School of Excellence in Sussex County, something that I would be interested in, of course, I have to phrase the question appropriately, is when we take a look at new charter schools, which this will be the first one, I believe, at least for many of us on the state board, this will be our first new charter school.
It'll be my first.
Really? Okay. Yes. Hey, we'll do it together. We'll have a good time. But I guess some kinds of questions regarding like the possible donation of land. I know that possibly like land costs and things like that, but I don't have that question framed, but there's a lot of those kinds of considerations that, you know, are questions that I certainly probably will be interested in. And, when we take a look at something that's a brand new charter school, so it's going to be a new adventure.
And Mr. Lofink, I don't think you will be the only one. I think facility is something that's probably going to be at the forefront of much of the CSAC's mind when it comes to a new charter school.
Mr. Travers, were you not there for Sussex Montessori?
I was not there for their CSAC process. I've been through their opening, and I've been with the department for about 2.5 years. Right. So I did pick up the process where we talked about this today in our training, where we meet with them. We met with them regularly to kind of go through their checklist and make sure they were on target to open. Right. But I was not there for their CSAC. Now, Mr. John Carwell, who many of you know, he's been with the department and in the charter school office for roughly 10 years. Wonderful, wonderful source of historical knowledge to kind of harken back, Dr. Noble, to your comments on Ms. Bunting, a wonderful source of historical knowledge for opening charter schools. He's been through many. Right. So he'll be
because
very
I do remember when we were looking when Sussex Montessori came through, there was quite a bit of discussion about location, and there were quite a few different proposals in which that actual issue was one of the reasons why that school delayed for a year so they could make the best decisions and have adequate funding for the location that they wanted. So I'm sure that's going to come up, Mr. Lofink. It's not an uncommon issue with these new creations. So,
well, especially if they have a 5-mile radius as anything. So, you know, where that school goes. And again, I fully admit I've not gone through all of the details of everything. And I don't personally know the area. But if they're talking about a specific area and then that 5-mile becomes any part of the admissions, that's certainly something that I do think people would be, you know, that indicates who gets in and who doesn't.
Well, I'm actually glad to see that there's a formal application for this school, because in the Sussex County papers for the last couple of years about this school as if it already exists. So, you know, I'm glad to see that they're actually formally going through the process. It doesn't actually exist, but it's been given that type of aura down here. Anyway. I still have a question about Great Oaks. I'm sorry, I didn't catch that at the very beginning. Can I still ask that question?
Certainly.
Of course.
You stated that they've received over 30 applications as of the beginning of this month. Where does that leave them as far as their percentage of approved enrollment at this point?
Yeah, I haven't done the math. They would still be short of the 80. But it's important to know that, you know, the application process isn't complete. It's just the lottery process. So they still have some time to work through, and they're still canvassing and putting their plan into place. I don't have the math right in front of me, and I don't want to pause the meeting to do it, but I can do the math. If all 36 were to, you know, be invited and accept, where would that leave them? And I can certainly do that math for you and send it to Jenna.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks.
Sure.
Okay, are there any further questions? You know, certainly with respect to anything that we want to make sure is addressed at CSAC. And again, if you don't have it tonight, there is time to get that through via Jenna. And then, you know, to the extent that anybody else want to have questions, but just broadly with respect to charter school. Okay. Mr. Travers, thank you very much. I think that closes that for now, but we appreciate your being with us tonight and the work you've done on charters.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. You too. Okay, so the next thing that we have on the agenda is something that is new, I'm going to say, for all of us, because this does not come in front of us very often. So we have a state board hearing and appeal. So this is a boundary dispute hearing for 410 Todd's Mill Road. This is for action. So I'm going to give a little bit of background, and then Ms. Jaros is going to give some background as well. So on September 29th, 2020, Stacy and Michael Edwards filed a petition with the board asking for us to resolve a boundary dispute concerning their property located at 410 Todd's Mill Road, Camden, Wyoming, Delaware 19934. The board appointed a hearing officer. On November 22nd, 2020, notice of the hearing date, time, and location was emailed to the Edwards and legal counsel for both Capital and Caesar Rodney School District. The notice was updated on November 23rd, 2020 to reflect that the hearing would be held virtually. Notice was also posted on the state calendar for members of the public. On December 4th, 2020, the hearing officer conducted the hearing, afterwards issuing a recommendation containing recommended findings of fact, conclusions of law, and a decision. On December 22nd, 2020, the Edwards submitted a comment. Ms. Honor provided members of the board with a complete record in this matter, including the hearing officer's recommendations, the exhibits, and the Edwards submitted comments. The matter is now on the board's agenda for consideration. Now, I'd like to I'd like to ask the board's legal counsel, Carla Jaros, to provide some guidance as to the board's responsibilities and summarize the evidence.
Thank you, Ms. Sweeney. Under 14 Delaware Code 1025, the board has the authority in cases of doubt or controversy to determine the correct location of a school district boundary. The board in this matter must examine the available records and hold a hearing with the owners of any involved properties. The board must decide, one, was there a doubt or controversy as to the boundary between the Capitol and Caesar Rodney School Districts concerning 410 Todd's Mill Road, Camden, Wyoming, Delaware? And two, if so, does the boundary include the property within the Capitol School District or within the Caesar Rodney School District? The board must have substantial evidence within the record to support its findings. To go back a minute, this matter involves the property located at 410 Todd's Mill Road. The property was originally part of a larger piece of land owned by Mrs. Edwards' family, the Raleigh family. 410 Todd's Mill was parceled off from the main property and acquired it by the Edwards in 2018. At that time, the property did not have a residence on it. The Edwardses have just finished building a residence and moved in. Their children are not yet old enough to attend public school. In 1974, the written boundary descriptions between Capitol and Caesar Rodney school districts traced existing paths, property boundaries, streets, and waterways as they existed in 1974. 410 Todd's Mill Road was part of the Olin Rowley property, which is referenced as such in the written boundary description. And it was contained within the Capitol School District. In 2004, the University of Delaware issued a report titled Delaware School District Organization and Boundaries, Closing the Gap. The UD report created a boundary database using a geographic informational system. The report modified some boundaries that were found to be ambiguous and confusing and included both the 1974 written boundary description between these two school districts, as well as a map of the boundary. The map of the boundary between the two districts separated the property now known as 410 Todd's Mill Road from the rest of the Olin Rowley property by following a tributary of the Isaac Branch River that divided this little piece of property from the rest of the larger property. And this 2004 UD report, then by tracing the Isaac Branch River, it included the 410 Todd's Mill Road property within the Caesar Rodney School District and left the remaining Olin Rowley property within the Capitol School District. The hearing officer in this matter found that there was a controversy as to the correct location of the existing boundary given the discrepancy between the 1974 written boundary description and the 2004 University of Delaware report on the boundary. Further, that the correct location of the boundary as it pertained to 410 Todd's Mill Road was within the Caesar Rodney School District based on the 2004 Geographic Information System map, the natural boundary created by the Isaac Branch River, and the accessibility of the school facilities within Caesar Rodney to 410 Todd's Mill Road. The hearing officer recommended that the board fix and establish the boundary between Capitol and Caesar Rodney to run along the Isaac Branch River behind the Edwards' property line, such that the Edwards property is located within the Caesar Rodney School District. Does anyone have any questions I might be able to answer?
Ms. Jaros, it's Vince Lofink. Quick question. I don't mean to jump ahead, but no matter what our determination is this evening, what is the, is there another appeal that the Edwards could make after a decision?
Yes, they could appeal the decision to the the Superior Court of the State of Delaware.
Okay. And okay. So there's still another step if they do not have satisfaction based on our decision tonight.
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Jarvis, it's Audrey Noble. I just have a question. If we vote to change this district boundary, will it affect any other properties or any other families in that area?
No, it won't.
Okay.
I do want to go back to Mr. Lofink's question, though, and further clarify that although the Edwardses, if they chose to, wanted to appeal to the Superior Court, the Superior Court is not going to look at it brand new. What they're going to look at is whether or not this body, this court, had substantial evidence and did not abuse its power in making the decision it made. So it's not brand new. Any other questions?
Ms. Jarvis, looking at the fact, and maybe if this is an inappropriate question, just tell me that. Sure. Is it the fact that neither school district made a comment or had a comment to the hearing? Is that to be interpreted that they're neutral then?
I wouldn't make that interpretation. No, I wouldn't assume that. The answer is no. I wouldn't assume that they're neutral as to the decision.
Because they chose not to make a presentation or turn in evidence or whatever the appropriate term is.
Right, but this matter is not what one would consider an adjudicatory matter. This is more an investigatory matter. The board's mandate under the statute is to review all the available evidence to make the decision. The school districts didn't have any responsibility to bring anything to the table.
And the hearing officer's report and recommendation, that's considered to be evidence?
No, that's a recommendation to you. The evidence is within the exhibits.
Okay.
Yes. And it's within the testimony that was given, which the hearing officer summarizes.
Thank you.
This is Reverend Powell. It's the same line of questioning with Mr. Lofink. I guess the question that I'm trying to understand is the function of the hearing officer. And I'm new to this. Our role or statutory role, I guess, as in engaging such an individual, what is their purpose if in fact their ruling and their finding is not binding?
What they're doing is basically taking all the testimony, collecting all the evidence, putting it together in a hearing package and giving you a recommendation. Whereas if they didn't exist, what the board would have to do was to hold that hearing itself. To enter evidence into the record and to hear the testimony, which the reason that hearing officers were originally kind of put into place was because these types of hearings can sometimes take a long time, and it was making it difficult for boards to engage with their other business. So that was why hearing officers came into place. In our new hearing procedures, I've recommended doing away with them in cases in which we've already have a record established, because yes, your responsibility as a board member is to still review the evidence in full. So if you already have a wholly established record, it makes it less valuable to have a hearing officer.
Jordan, I think that can be.
But in this case, you had, what, I don't know, an hour or two of testimony and evidence condensed for you into a recommendation?
Yes, I was just noticing that there was a lot of research done by Ms. Honor in this case, and I tried to go through it knowing that I'm not either an attorney nor a surveyor to try to determine the substantial evidence to justify a decision. So, just making that comment about the difficulty of landing on a decision because there was a lot of information and research presented, and listening to the hearing officer, that just made the decision even the more difficult for me. So just my comment.
Yeah, this is Audrey Noble. I'd just like to thank the two of you for pulling all this information together. It seems to me the key issue is the difference in methodology that was enabled between the original report in 1974 and the work that the University of Delaware was able to do with the GIS system. In my mind, I feel like there's plenty of information here that says that the boundary should be reset. And, I would concur with what the hearing officer is saying, that there's plenty of data.
Dr. Noble, I'm gonna cut you off for a second, okay. Because we're just asking specific questions, okay, of Ms. Jaros. Then we're going to open the floor. No. I'm just trying to explain why I'm cutting you off.
That's all right.
Because we're going to actually have the Edwards, if they want to. I don't actually know if they're on or not. I know they did provide a written comment, but we want to make sure that they have the opportunity, if they would like to make a comment, and then we as a board discuss it. Sorry, I'm just trying to follow the protocol on that, so I don't mean to cut you off.
No problem.
Thank you. Are there any other questions just from more of a perspective as to what do we need to do that Ms. Jaros can answer for us?
This is Wally Rushdan. I have one question that I think I may already know the answer to, but I just like to have it be reinforced or perhaps stated or clarified by Ms. Jaros, if possible. And it relates to the essential dichotomy here that Dr. Noble essentially teed up, which is the two different delineations of the boundaries based on the earlier study and the most recent one with the GIS technology. And would you characterize the difference essentially as one that was an error from the earlier sort of articulation of the boundary, or one that is more so a more accurate sort of depiction based on the improvements in the technology and the GIS system and its ability to sort of identify these areas more precisely?
Based on
the
way that,
the latter.
Yes, I don't think this is an error, but as you read the written property boundary, you will notice that it says things like the Olin Rowley property, rather than using a specific, GPS coordinates or something to identify the boundary. So yes, as technology improves, I think you get a more precise determination, I guess would be the right word. We also, within the evidence, you have the fact that this particular property at issue did not exist back with the 1974 or even the 2004 reports.
Right. Thank you for that.
Are there further questions for Ms. Jaros before this is opened up? Before we ask Mr. and Mrs. Edwards if they would like to make a statement. Okay. Now, I don't know, Ms. Honor, do we have the Edwards on the line? And I'd like to make sure that we're offering them. One, do we have them on the line?
Yes, we have them on the line, and they've indicated interest in making a comment.
Okay, that would be great. And I know everyone's put a lot of work into this. So we have 5 minutes. So, Ms. Honor, if you could set the clock on that, then we will give the floor to Mr. and Mrs. Edwards. And when you get on, if you could state your name before you begin speaking.
Okay, you should be able to unmute your microphone now. You are unmuted on our end. Looks like they might be having a slight technical difficulty, so I'm going to give them a minute just to work that out.
Yeah, please. Yeah, I definitely want to give them a minute because I know this is important. As Reverend Powell said, an enormous amount of work has gone into this from a research standpoint. So let's give them a second.
Okay, let's try again.
Hi, this is Stacey Edwards. Can you hear me?
We can.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. My husband, Michael Edwards, is also here. Our formal comment is, dear board members, we sincerely thank you, all those involved in this process. We understand the number of resources and time that have been used for our case. We agree with Dr. Pledge's recommendation to fix 410 Tazemill Road into the Cesar Rodney School District. This is in line with the Delaware State Board of Education documentation for school district boundaries. We appreciate further consideration from fellow board members. And that's all we had to say.
Great. Thank you very much. We appreciate your comment. And now we will go ahead and open it up to the board. So for the discussion, and just, I think everybody's muted. So I don't think this could happen, but, you know, just to be clear that, you know, we can't have any interruptions. This is just appropriate for the board to kind of discuss amongst itself. And, you know, we can ask for clarification if we need something, but we can't bring any personal knowledge that's outside of the hearing record that we have in front of us into our discussion, just to make sure everyone is clear as to what it is that we need to be using to make this decision. So with that, I'm going to open it up, and actually I'm going to direct immediately to Dr. Noble because she had a question and I stopped her earlier, or she had some comments and I stopped her earlier.
Thank you. I guess I do have another clarification, Ms. Jarvis. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about the issue of how the property was described in the early report and how the property was split later and the current location of the Edwards home. I think I have an understanding of that, but I just want to be clear that I get that.
Of course, although it is more, it's easier to see on a map, to
yeah,
be honest.
I'm looking at the map, okay.
But as part of the written boundary description for the property, the written boundary description, and I'm looking at it, looking for it right here so you can, it's within the hearing officer's recommendation, and it's as follows. It goes, by the northern boundary of the former Juergens property west to the western boundary of the George F. Pappen farm at the Olin Rowley property, by the Olin Rowley property boundary south and west to Route 203, by Route 203 north to Route 73, and on. Right. And that's within the recommendation. And so in 1974, the Olin Rowley property was essentially a big square that was contained within the Capital School Districts with the sides, the properties on either side to the east and west within the Cesar Rodney School District. The 410 Tazemill Road is all the way in the southwestern corner of the Olin Rowley property, and that run, there's a river branch that runs right between it, kind of cutting off the corner of that property. And that's where it is.
Yeah,
so,
okay. All right. So, some of the issues that were kind of resolved by the UD report was how the properties were described when they were described as somebody's farm or somebody's property versus a specific marker like a road or a river. So that's clear. Okay, thank you very much. I get it now. I'm with you.
Do you have any further comments? And I'm just going to open it up. I mean, there. I think Reverend Powell said it best. I'm not a surveyor. There is a lot of maps in here and a lot of drawings, and this is certainly not my area of expertise. But I want to make sure that there's a full discussion to the extent anyone has any questions or comments. Okay. I'm going to take that silence for no one has any further questions or comments. That said, I'm going to ask if there's a motion, and you know, the obvious, we have a couple options. We accept the hearing officer's recommendations in full. We accept it, but we modify it in any particular way. I don't off the top of my head think of anything, but you know, that's an option. Or we reject the hearing officer's finding of facts, conclusions of law, and decision as to the boundary. So I would like to open it up to the floor for a motion.
This is Wally Rushdan. I move that we accept the hearing officer's recommendations for the boundary decision, such that the applicant's property is now considered to be in the Caesar Rodney School District.
This is Audrey Noble. I second that.
Ms. Smith, if you could call the roll.
Mr. Lofink.
Yes.
Dr. Noble.
Yes.
Reverend Powell.
Yes.
Mr. Rushdan.
Yes.
Ms. Sweeney.
Yes, the motion carries. That is the last thing. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We have formal public comment. Okay. So, all right. So our first boundary dispute, we know a little bit more about properties, and that was certainly interesting in this honor. And Ms. Jaros, thank you very much, because I know just in talking to both of you over the last couple of months or so that this has been a lot of time. So I appreciate the work that you did on our behalf. The next is formal public comment. So this is time set aside at this point in the agenda for general public comment. As a reminder, the board does not respond to questions or engage in a dialogue with those offering comments during the board meeting. Ms. Honor, has anyone signed up via email or via the chat box?
We have not had anybody sign up. We ask if you would like to provide comment at this time to please write in or raise your hand.
Has anyone written in or raised their hand?
No.
Okay. Then at that point in time, is there a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting?
Lofink, so moved.
Reverend Powell, second.
Any objections? It is 8:15 and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a good night and Happy New Year.